country?
Oh, I've been told that I'd be indie folk punk, which I was like, all right.
No, I feel like it's more of like hipster country.
Yeah, I get into that genre a little bit. I'll be real. I get in there.
Everyone, and welcome to the Brought to the Table podcast. This is a podcast that normally has friends, but today it features Diana's
today it features adversaries. Get your fucking swords out, boys. It's time.
I'm ready.
Is that like an innuendo or something?
Three headaches that Diana has decided to keep since college, and their names are Carter, Ian, and Scott. And this is my descent into the void, recorded in an audio format.
You guys today, didn't see it, but when Diana said my name, I dabbed. Just, I don't think that the
thank
audio,
you.
Let me try again.
Carter.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, see, that was even worse.
There we go. Beautiful.
Thanks.
Today, we are talking about a very special topic, and that is creativity and the creative process.
Oh, wait, why'd you invite me here?
We are not very creative.
Scott, you're literally one of the most creative people here, and you just, I can't with you.
I use green all the time.
What?
Is not a creative
green is a
color.
Green is not a creative color.
Wait, what?
It is too. It's made out of two other colors. Somebody was like, hey,
you guys
I like
don't get
blue
the reference.
And I like
you're,
yellow.
You're rejected
no,
from this
fuck
episode.
It.
Wait a minute.
Yes,
wait,
okay. All right, I'm out. Bye.
We'll fucking link it in
why
the app description, I guess.
Why is green not a creative color?
Green is not a creative color. That's it. That's all you need to know. Let's move on to literally anything. Yeah, so this episode is going to be super freeform, as evidenced by, like, normally I have, I don't know, beer or a hard liquor when I record. This time I have wine, which sort of gives off that
flavor. Oh, shit.
That
he's
going to
get wine mom drunk. He's going to get, like,
it's
three
only
bottles
the one,
of wine mom drunk.
It's only the one cup, and it's literally in, like, a what amounts to a solo cup, so.
No,
this is gonna
it's
be
actually
like
a barrel. He just has a straw.
It's going to be like sophomore, sorority sister at a college party who brought a box of wine because it's classier than vodka, but she still
I
wanted to
Crispin.
Drink.
I had a Crispin. I had a Crispin.
Also
and
good.
Now I'm drunk.
See? There you go. You get it. You get it.
Ian
anyways,
gets it.
So
I do
now what
it.
I've done just there is I've created a fiction, okay? And there's
no,
the segue.
That's
mean,
a reality.
That is a reality for some people, but not for me, because I am not a sophomore in college, and I am not a sorority sister, as far as you guys know.
The investigation is still pending on that one.
The investigation is
more
still
research
pending.
Is required.
I'm trying really hard to segue into literally something we can actually talk about, because, I like to craft fiction around characters. So a lot of us, actually all of us, we play Dungeons & Dragons, which is a collaborative storytelling experience game. It's a role-playing game. But the way I like to describe it to people who don't know what that means is it is a story that you tell as a group. You have dice, you roll them, and that tells you how good you are at things, and then you try to do those things. And so that's it's a collaborative storytelling experience, which for the most part is character driven. And the only reason that I bring that up is because that is an important part to my creative process. Like a lot of what I do when I write fiction, because I think for the most part, myself, Ian, and Diana will be talking about creating fiction. Although I guess we could also leverage this into talking about other things that we create. I mean, this podcast is something we create, does require some creativity to do it. And then I think, Scott, you're going to be talking about the like your musical creative process, you know, having written several songs and arranged things. I don't know the musical words here.
We create a lot of things. Creativity can be a lot of forms, whether it's a podcast or writing fiction or it's making art or you're wood burning something or you're knitting something or crocheting something. The creative process applies to a lot of different things that involve just actually making something.
Yeah, and so I want to start us off with the thing that I think we are all most familiar with, like as a group.
Guilty of.
And that's the Dungeons & Dragons sort of role-playing, you know, and creating a character and creating a history and creating a narrative along with others. I want to hear what you guys do. So, like, when you're creating a character, and as a player, that's something that you'll do, I won't say infrequently, but it's something that you need to do. And every time you start something new, you have to create one. That's just something that happens. So I want to like get y'all's thoughts and opinions about like how you create a character and what that means when you do create that character.
for me, kind of the creative process of character creation, especially as it comes to D&D, has always been kind of a continuum spectrum. I feel like a lot of people start in very similar places when making their first D&D character, whether it be, I'm making somebody who's exactly like me, or I'm making someone who is nothing like me. But a lot of times, and I know that some of you guys do this too, I kind of roll with a concept or an idea. I think one of the first characters I made to play with you guys was, I liked the idea of taking two very opposite things and putting them together, so I had a half-orc bard. Which it was just a fun combination of things that I was like, can I make this happen? And I walked up to Ian and I was like, can I make this happen? And he's like, let me show you how to make this happen. And so it was kind of fun to have a funny concept turn into an actual character. And then other times, concepts like that are just kind of fun to roll with. Like, I made one character that reminded me of Drax from Guardians of the Galaxies because I really liked the idea of that kind of character moving around in the world. Just a character who is intensely literal. I will say probably the character I've had the most fun making recently was my former rest in peace character Flint McElroy in the campaign I'm playing with Carter, just because it started with me wanting to play a really cool race. Like, I kind of get bored with some of the vanilla races that we see, just kind of standard. And there was some new books coming out, new information on fun races to play in 5e. And one of those fun ones was, like, Genasi, the children of, like, djinns and, you know, and other beings, elves, humans, whatever. And so I kind of just took the idea of what this character might be like, and I kind of just transformed. And it's kind of fun because the beautiful part about D&D and characters is you kind of make it up as you go along. Like, you have this idea of who a character is, but until they interact in the world, interact with the DM, interact with other NPCs or other members of the party, you don't really have kind of a solid basis for their personality until they kind of start in the world itself. And so it's fun because the character I started with and who I had an idea of who Flint was wildly different from when it ended, from when my sweet, sweet boy died recently in campaign. It was just wildly different. And I think that's part of the fun part about D&D is the creative process is an ongoing process. You don't just make the character, you go through character creation, but you kind of round out and develop the character as you play the game.
Yeah, that's how my character went. I was going to just go next and say how I made my character for the same campaign, which is, it sounds like you made a character and, like, the world formed around your, like, the world shaped your character from it started, but Carter told me the world, and so I made a character I thought would fit into this kind of world instead. So he told me about this, you know, he told me about Waterdeep and kind of there's, you know, very tight rules, like, strictly enforced by the guard, but there's also, like, underground crime that's kind of hidden. And so there's not a lot of, you know, like, violence in the streets, but there's lots of shady dealings going on. And I'm like, what kind of shady person would I want to be in this kind of world? And so I took some inspiration, pun intended.
That was a fun joke.
Love it. Love it.
I took inspiration from good old Littlefinger Peter Baelish from Game of Thrones. I was like, what if I'm just the shady character that nobody likes?
And then
the world also shaped me, because it turns out at level one, you're just not very good at doing anything. And so you kind of have to just beat stuff up sometimes.
We've all played RuneScape. We all know that you got to fight a shit ton of rats and then run away from a shit ton of rats and then go back and fight a shit ton of rats to get anywhere in life.
Exactly.
Need that on, like, a motivational poster with a kitten hanging from a tree.
Beat up a shit ton of rats. You'll get somewhere eventually.
Ian, what about you? How, like, what? I don't know if you have, like, a creative process that you use to define a character that is going to be, like, in an you know, because right now I think we're all focusing on more extended characters. You know, you can create a one-shot character like Hemo Black from our previous episode where we played D&D. He's kind of a one-shot character where I just thought this would be a fun thing to do. And then I did it, and I was an asshole about it.
I mean, honestly, that's a large part of, if I'm doing a character that just needs to pop up in, like, a game that I'm DMing, and it's like, fuck, I need a bartender. And that's not somebody you can just throw together of, like, oh, there's a human with, like, blue hair sitting behind the bar. Like, actually, that would probably get you assholes to talk to that person.
Yeah.
Either way. But, like, you know, in most situations, you'd be like, oh, well, you know, there's a couple of, you know, vendors in the area. You've got a couple of humans that are selling what appears to be blah, blah, blah. Like, you can throw in, like, facts here and there. But if you want a character that's somewhat, like, driving some part of the plot that's just one shot, you just go with, like, a random name. And then just, like, a very just small defining feature. So, like, you know, there's a human behind the bar with blue hair. That kind of snaps of, all right, this is an interesting character. There's something different out of the ordinary about them. Let's go and just investigate it.
There's but a shop really... with a gnome who only sells purple things.
Yeah. And I mean, and that's the thing is, like, you just throw one little, like, interesting fact about it, and then kind of you cheat a lot by letting the players fill out everything else for you.
That's interesting. I like that sort of design structure because, I mean, for me, when I think about this stuff, like, that's what this is. You know, we're all of us have we have our own design structures for how a character or a fiction or something like that, a building, comes into place. And so the structure of just let the players do the heavy lifting, you know, mm-hmm. of how they interact and how they define, you know, I think a good example is one session a little while ago of what I ran. The players wanted to, Scott and Diana included, they wanted to go to this temple, and I had no idea what was in this temple. and so I kind of just winged it the whole way. You know, I let them interpret actions that happened to them or parts about, like, the facade of the building, things like that, as what defined the tone of the place. And then when they got inside, you know, I was able to run with what they had interpreted from the limited description that I had given. Like, I do that for places. I very rarely yeah. do that for characters. So I find that very interesting.
Oh, I have definitely done that before for a place. Ian was like, I'm going to go see the library. And I'm looking at the map that I had prepared. There's no fucking library on here. Of course Ian wants to go see the fucking library.
I mean, that's honestly... You know, something that I enjoy doing, it's something that I have been horrible about in the past of, like, I must plan out literally every single final, like, brick in this goddamn fucking city, because something that I've been working on is trying not to control literally everything about a world that I create. As you guys know, but, you know, listeners probably would not know, there's been a actual setting slash universe that I've been working on for about 3, 4, 5 years, maybe?
It's been
a
so long
ass time.
It's been great because it will be about midnight and I'll be getting ready to say goodnight to Ian. And Ian was like, hey, Diana, wait. Let me tell you about how this world was created. And I'm like, this is all fabulous, Ian. But where did the players come in? And he's like, we'll get there later, but here's how the world was created. And I'm like, Ian, are the players ever going to get here? And he's like, no, no way. They'll never get here. But here's how the world was created. And I'm just like, Ian, this is fabulous, but we need to play this.
And see, and that's the important thing that, like, I've always had a lot of trouble with, but I've, like, slowly gotten better with, is the idea of, you know, I can build the entire world, the backdrop, but, like, if I don't do things with it, if I don't put players into it, it doesn't really exist in any way. And the best way that I've found to at least get people engaged into the story and, like, be a creative group is to give them those options of, okay, you know, you walk into this area, tell me what does it look like to you, what do you think it is, and just kind of building it off of that. Because one, it makes it easier where I don't have to come up with literally everything on my own, but at the same time the players are getting their own input. And you're going to have a lot more buy-in into your story. I mean, this works well in D&D. It doesn't really work all that well in a story that you're telling unless you're doing, like, a live telling of a story. But,
you know. I mean, maybe the piece of advice to take from that is sometimes you just kind of have to let the world go where it goes as opposed to try to pre-plan it. Like, sometimes when writing short stories, you're like, oh man, I did not picture this character or this place looking like this, but it makes sense now that I'm like 8 pages in, and that you can't always control things. And sometimes I think that's a good piece of, like, just general creative advice. It's like, you can't always control things from the back end. Sometimes you just gotta let it go where it goes.
Yeah. I mean, what I've found is that writing from the beginning and knowing what the middle looks like is the dumbest idea you could possibly have. because it's so hard. Because it's like so when you know, we speak a lot about Dungeons and Dragons because that is what we do. That's how we create fiction, you know, in our group. I've created fiction in other ways. You know, I've written some I wouldn't even call them short stories. I've written some snippets here and there, and like I write them from the middle because I don't know what the rest of the world looks like. I think one good example of this that one of our friends that we've spoken about regularly, his name's Connor. He runs a Dungeons and Dragons campaign that I play in.
Everybody knows him. You can say his name.
What's important to me about his campaign is that my character, when I created him, was a set of mechanics. I thought the mechanics were interesting, and I wanted to see how that played out. And so I built this character because I thought in combat he would be interesting, and then I wanted to flesh out what else he was. And so as I did that, Connor, the DM, he was saying, Carter, you don't have a backstory. You don't have any motivations. And I would just tell him, I'm getting there. Because I didn't know who Keth, my character, I didn't know who he was yet. I didn't know what he was going to say when somebody confronted him with a problem. And so how can I create a backstory which in theory should craft Keth to be the man that he was at the time if I don't know who the man he is now is, you know?
Oh, I definitely get that. After my most recent character, Flint, died, I thought it was suddenly a lot easier to kind of picture his backstory. I had not written a backstory for this character because I get overly attached to characters, and then I get really sad when we don't play the campaigns with them anymore, so I decided just to not do the heartache, but then he died, and I was very sad. But now that I kind of know the end, and I kind of have seen the character move in the world, I know who that character is, so it's a lot easier for me to craft that backstory.
I mean, I definitely think that's an important point when it comes to creating characters, either NPCs or your own player characters, is to find, like, one thing about them that you know. So, like, you know, Carter, I find it interesting that Keth was your barbarian, right?
Yes, Keth is a barbarian who's got ancestral magic powers.
Okay, amongst other things. So the thing that I find interesting is one of my characters, the one that I'm currently playing in another campaign, is Jan. He's a Goliath barbarian. I created him in kind of a similar fashion as you, where it's like, oh, hey, the mechanics in 5e for grappling is really kind of interesting. It's not as broken as 3.5, unfortunately, but it's a very interesting mechanic. I want to build a character that's what he does. His whole point is to go in there and just grab people and stop them from, like, hurting his friends. And from that, I've kind of built around this entire character idea based on, hey, his whole thing is, you know, oh, hey, these are people that I care about. These are people that I've, like, protected me, so therefore I will protect them. How do I stop stuff from happening? I grab people and I, like, will throw them off a cliff, or I will grab somebody and, like, just choke them out, or I will hold them still for the rest of the party to basically beat up while that's taken care of. But the rest of his character kind of is built around that idea of, I have a core thought of, I will protect what is mine and I will protect those who I care about. And everything else about the character just kind of builds off of that point. As he comes into new experiences in the campaign, I don't really have to think of, like, okay, well, if this is going on, he would probably do this, or would he do this? It just kind of, I would look at it as, all right, here's where he has been. These are choices he has made. It makes the most sense that he would then go and do this thing, and I proceed to go and do that thing. If it's successful, it's successful. If it fails, it fails. But it just feels very in character for me.
I like it a lot. You know, just knowing what feels good is something that I think is important when you're role-playing a character. One thing that I saw that was very interesting, or I've heard, is like knowing what your character can't do. For example, the character that I'm thinking of just can't lie. He just fucking sucks at it. Knowing where your character's limits are and having that touchstone for this is how I know I behave, I think is a good jumping off point for, you know, what you can do other than that. Then you can extrapolate to other things about your character. Like, why can't he lie? Well, he can't lie because he wants, you know, to have an honest relationship with people. So then he would value people who are honest with him. And so, you know, that informs another part of your character and, you know, so on and so forth.
Yeah. And like, that's something that I found when it comes to, you know, either writing fiction in D&D or just writing stories. That's something that, like, I get into, is writing origin stories for different D&D characters, or just writing stories in this universe that I've made. if I have like 1 point, I can build off of that, because it's less of, well, what do I think they would do? And it's more of, okay, I have this loose idea of what this person or this character would do, and I've thrown them into this situation. It doesn't necessarily feel like to me I'm choosing what they do. It's more of like, okay, I think they would do this. Like, it seems like that's what they would do, and I just write whatever they would do. It's less of I'm coming up with it and more of a natural progression of steps.
Kind of relating to the greater creative process, because kind of making characters for D&D seems like a niche kind of creative process. I think there's a lot of lessons from it that kind of relate to creative processes as a whole. And having starting points to small things that you think to start from are important, because, guys, when I was younger and I was playing clarinet in band in school, I got really miserable practicing, but one of the best times I ever had was I took two notes that kind of sounded like the theme song to one of my favorite TV shows at the time, and I ended up spending like 30 minutes playing the clarinet just trying to master this one like theme song that I had made sound similar. So like, you can take these kind of like similar-ish points and kind of apply them to the creative process as a whole. It's good to have small points to start from. Starting from like a small doodle turns into a really big pretty picture. A few notes turns into like making up a song. Having small starting points, like a character trait, like this character can't lie. Carter's right. That branches off into so many more things to kind of build on top of.
So I want to pivot from this into something that's a little different. I want to pivot into world building a little bit.
Yeah.
Because Ian and I know take very different structures in how we create a world. I've actually had two really solid experiences with world building, and they've been very different from one another. One of which is a Dungeons & Dragons campaign, which I ran a long time ago, like a year ago, more than a year ago. And in fact, that setting, we have Diana and I recorded an episode where I sort of fill her in on the story of that setting and the lore behind it and all that stuff. And that was interesting because that was all my creation. And I was so bad at maintaining it. And that was like just a byproduct of where I used it, because this setting was a Dungeons and Dragons setting, like I said. And so I had this terrible habit of, you know, people would ask me questions about the world and then I would answer them, you know, and just like offhand, thinking that I knew what I was talking about when I really had no idea, because I would say like, oh, so-and-so did this. And then I would go back and be like, there's actually four of these guys. Why did I say there was just one? And so I'd have to like rewrite my entire, you know, religion that I had come up with because I offhand said something and I didn't want to contradict myself down the road. And so that was a very interesting thing for me to do. But my like, that's how a lot of that world building came out, because I didn't have a lot of it fleshed out when we would go in to do things. And so my players essentially just asked me questions that I didn't know the answers to, and then I'd have the answers to them. That's how it worked. It was great, which I know is exactly the opposite of how Ian does it. So, Ian, how do you do it?
In some ways, that's kind of what I do. A large part of it is I like having at least the backbones of the world set up. And, like, I typically end up, you know, honestly, it's kind of like I'm stealing it from it. Like, my universe that I've built off of is, like, hugely based off of the Eberron setting for 3.5, which thankfully has finally made its way into 5e. If, you know, you've never looked at the Eberron setting, please give it a check out. It's D&D, but steampunk and amazing. But it's something that I've used a lot of it as, like, the background or the backbone of this sort of setting. But I've also pulled in things from, like, Magic the Gathering or Elder Scrolls. Like, a bunch of different universes or a bunch of different settings to kind of, like, merge them all together. So I have a loose idea of, if this were to happen, this is the most likely outcome. If a player asks me, hey, I don't know this spell, but like I have an idea of how it works, if you can tell me a story of, okay, well, I know this spell and it's similar and I want to try it, I could probably finagle a roll on the spot and be like, okay, give me an arcana check and then give me a will check or a constitution saving throw. And if they're successful, boom, they can do that. But there's going to be a penalty because that's how I've set up magic to work. But at the same time, there's a bunch of things where I can't predict everything a party's going to do. So there's still a large part where I have to just kind of roll with it, like Carter says. But I still enjoy having that loose framework of, okay, this is a slightly different situation than what I was expecting, but I can kind of make it work this way.
I like to start in the middle with a lot of the things that I build with my characters. You know, like I said, I start in the middle because that's where the campaign starts, in the middle of this person's life. I like to start in the middle for creating a setting. I like to think of just a cool place to exist in, and I will figure out how it got built later, if at all. I don't think that it's important to figure out where it came from.
See, I find that really interesting that you're like, start in the middle with a character, because I feel like starting any sort of D&D campaign, that was one of the things that I did at the very, very beginning of playing D&D, and it's something that I found very difficult because, you know, you have these ideas of like really big characters and like, oh, they're able to do this and they fought off 100 people in a huge bar fight and blah, 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 blah. And it's like you start off level one and like we said earlier, rats are your biggest problem. Like rats are actually a threat. And it's like, but what about those 100 people that I fought? And it's like, sure, you did that. But for whatever reason, you can't even fight off a rat without possibly dying. And so
for
it's like,
reference. Ian, how long have you been playing D&D?
I think the first time that I made a character that I played might have been 20 years ago.
What edition did you start with?
Second. Actually, no. AD&D. So Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. So kind of like 1.5 second edition.
To give the audience some perspective, Ian has been playing the most of Dungeons & Dragons for the most. The longest. He has been playing all the Dungeons and Dragons. So when Ian talks about knowing cool mechanics and wanting to work from that, I promise he knows what he's talking about.
I mean, to be fair, it's just go and have fun with it. Like, you know, the idea that we had with your character, Diana, where it was the half-orc bard, like, that's not optimized for like a really, really strong character in the sense of like abilities and what they can do. But I've always been a person of, hey, if it's an interesting character idea, fucking do it. Like, I want to see that. I want to have a good story. I want like my characters, the ones that I play as, they might not be able to like defeat everything, but I want it to actually be like worthwhile to tell that story. Like my barbarian, he's actually a barbarian bard. And his whole point is he goes in and, like we said, grapples, but he also shoots off like inspiration and tries to like help everybody else in the group to do better. And is the idea of a storyteller. I mean, they can, but they can also do things to hurt. My character's background is the fact that, you know, he's a barbarian, he's a nomadic, he is a member of a nomadic tribe of people who base a large part of their society around storytelling. And the idea for them is magic and life itself is a give and take. Certain individuals who can do magic are able to, you know, it's either taking or giving magic. Healing and producing things is giving, but then doing harm or fireballs and stuff like that hurts, that is taking magic. And so it's the idea for him, he like recently found out that he is able to do magic, and so therefore he has left his tribe to become a storyteller and to travel around the world before he returns to his tribe as like a rite of passage to become what's known as a given, which is somebody who is from one tribe to another to kind of like build relations between the tribes. And that's just from a mechanic.
Yeah, the takeaway is that sometimes rules and law and like kind of rules and parameters that often sometimes apply to different pieces of the creative process for whatever medium you're working with, sometimes taking one portion of that and kind of turning it or kind of taking it to its fullest extent can truly take you farther than you thought you were going to go. There is a wonderful friend of ours who is an artist, and she had her show recently, and I'm so happy for her. And some of her art is incredible, and a lot of it, I remember watching her do some of her paintings at one point, and it's interesting because she'll start with this one kind of like point, and then just kind of blossom into this larger, it turns into multiple pieces, it turns into shows, it turns into this wonderful creative thing. So you can take, this seems like kind of writing advice, but these are also good pieces for like general creative process. You can take small rules, small points like this, and just turn it into so much more.
I actually want to ask Scott a question because, you know, I think that Diana, myself, and Ian have played D&D and, you know, done this sort of collaborative fiction stuff for longer than you have.
True.
Yeah, so I really want to ask you about how this most recent campaign that we've been playing has like, been for you. Because for those of you unfamiliar, which will probably be a lot of people who listen to this, we've been playing Waterdeep Dragon Heist, which is a pre-written story that I am running for Diana and Scott and several other people. And I think this is probably like the, well, I know probably for me, this is the longest campaign that I've ever been in continuously, you know, that's regularly met.
We worked really hard to keep it up, guys. We've worked very hard to keep going on this.
So I want to know, like, how your character, Zarki, has felt to you, and, like, if you felt the need to think about his past or think about, you know, like, where you wanted him to go outside of a mechanical perspective, or if, like, just existing in the moment, you know, and existing within this campaign is, like, is what you want out of it, or I don't know, I just want to hear your thoughts on it.
I was trying to keep my character, I don't want to say one-dimensional, because he's supposed to be kind of sneaky, which is already has more than one dimension, but none past that, really.
Pourquoi?
I don't know. You talked earlier about like knowing your character's limits, and I like when I make a character having the dimension that they are special in, and then trying to fit everything into that, because it... Otherwise, you have basically too many decisions to make. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of possibilities, and sometimes it can feel like you want to like kind of pull your character in whichever direction is either more fun or more useful. But I was trying to do that when I was like picking spells, when I was, you know, making decisions about the game, and it's like, well, Zarki doesn't really care about the other people in his party, so he's probably not going to take the tiny hut spell to save them.
Yeah. I mean, like, you're fitting a motif. You're fitting an archetype that you've built.
I find that, like, at least this is only the second character I made. I don't want to have, like, too in-depth of a backstory, because a lot of the times you can take, like, parts of the backstory and, like, they basically only open up more decisions for you if you pick this, like... I don't know. I'm kind of like the straw man NPC almost, where you have like you have the characteristics that are available to you, and that's it.
Okay, I like it. You know, I think that's important when you're creating a character. You know, just like knowing what you aren't. You know, like I definitely very much so appreciate that. Like my character that I've got right now, he's not a party face. He's there to kick ass. That's literally all he does. But he does it like in a way that like he's got decisions that he makes, and those decisions are pretty easy for me to make because that's his character. His character makes a decision on a dime, and if it's wrong, it's wrong. If it's right, it's right. And so like you know, it's those limitations that I think are very interesting. You know, yeah. It's not conflict because you know, you don't have to worry about it. You've got the decision pre-made for you, but it, like it's depth by removing depth, I think. Depth to the overall.
You can use some like reverse psychology on Zarki's current state to come up with a backstory. Like, he's a loner. He, even though he is a criminal, he doesn't actually fit in with any of the criminals. Nobody really wants to accept him as part of like a family, except aww. I guess the party. But he doesn't really want to be accepted by them too much. So
the party is trying so hard to accept Zarki, and Zarki is like the cat who just doesn't want to live there.
Yeah. Like, you can extrapolate some kind of troubled childhood, but maybe he's got the confidence that's not, like, totally ruined. But I think he's not a person who would ever share that with anybody, so that's my cop-out.
I like it. I truly do. Okay, the I don't know. I'm trying to think like where else we can go with this, because I don't want to just sit here and talk about D&D all day, even though I can fucking do it.
that's not hard for us to do.
Yeah.
Maybe we could shift mediums.
Sure.
Does anybody know a good seance? God damn it, right. Scott. We both can't do the same joke.
You will meet a tall, dark, handsome man, and he will be everything you're looking for.
I'm just tall, Diana.
You're not even that tall.
I'm not that tall. I'm tallish.
We have Connor. You're not dark. Connor, you're not handsome. Wins tallish. I know. Wait, Connor's taller than you, right?
Barely, but yeah.
Yeah, like an inch or two.
That sounded like I was offended by it, but I'm not.
Yeah, that really did, Carter.
All of you are tall, and I can't tell the difference.
It's really hard to see from that low.
Scott, you do a lot of creative stuff with music. Do you have a creative process or thought process when you go into kind of working with music and stuff?
I think it depends. I have creative forms, some of which are more creative than others, but when you get into the process, none of them are very creative. I think that's the common ground.
What do you mean by creative forms, though?
So, you know, you have things like writing poems or making films, so on and so forth. The main things I do that would be labeled as some people by creative, but I'm only going to try and shoehorn it or whatever into this conversation. I don't do a lot of writing original music. I do performing music. The most creative thing I do is arranging existing music, and it's mostly in reductions. So I will take, say, a part that has a song that has lots of moving parts, and I will play it on one guitar by myself, which, if it's a very simple song or that song only has two moving parts, is much different than like arranging kind of a big part. And so the creative part comes in is you have a lot of decisions to make, and a lot of times, I mean, never is a time where there's a right answer. So you can take like a lead sheet for Beyond the Sea, and you can play it, just play the melody straight off the page. Not very creative, you're just reading. You can add in some chords, and you can play them as dun, 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 and still also not very creative. But making arrangements is kind of like making parodies. At some point, the parody is just you doing a recital of the existing piece, and the better the arrangement, or at least subjectively to me, the better the arrangement, the more you've thrown in there that either you're making it more of a reference to the original, or you're adding in your own things that make it unique. You make it enjoyable to watch it or listen to it or do whatever, even though it is not the original. And the original, you know, is enjoyable in its own right, probably.
Can I ask a potentially dumb question? When Sure. You say arrangement, you mean just multiple songs, you're putting multiple songs together,
no.
Right?
Arrangement sometimes refers to that, like doing mashups of songs. Mm-hmm. Arrangement usually means making a specific kind of playable thing. For example, like you may take a piece for big band and you would arrange it for solo or a duo or a quartet or something like that. So sometimes arrangements are reductions where you take a lot of parts, you pick out the important like melody, pick out the important harmonies, and you put it into a smaller set. And I do that a lot for fun, where I'll take some song and I'll arrange it for solo guitar because I play by myself, or I sing with people that I know and we arrange it for like three part.
He sings really well, guys. He sings really well.
I'm the worst person in my singing group for sure.
Oh, God, your singing group is just Beyonce then? Damn.
No. If I want to just jam, and I think that's the only, like, creative original thing I do, I don't, like, formally write music or lyrics or anything. It's also kind of an inspired process, right? I like to think that nothing in music is original, because just like, I assume you guys kind of have these, you have patterns that you've seen in the world, and you kind of borrow this one thing from the other and you put it here, or you think of a character subconsciously or consciously that you've seen in like a movie and you make them an NPC, or you make them a PC in your world, or you make their home part of your world.
I fully just said earlier that like I rip stuff from like Magic and Elder Scrolls, so yeah, definitely.
Yeah, tropes, archetypes, motifs, themes, all that sort of stuff.
The thing that I think has some stuff in common with like writing fiction or other creative forms that I just don't know a lot about is music also has a lot of really useful rules, and that if you study like intro music theory, which is all I've really taken, there are specific patterns like chord progressions and stuff like that, that if you follow them, you'll make something that just like sounds kind of familiar. It's familiar because people have used it so much. And the fun part about music is the less you follow the patterns, the more interesting it sounds. But if you were to only not follow the patterns, it sounds like ass. So you basically get these patterns and you kind of deform them into the parts that sound good to you and have just enough that it sounds familiar and people enjoy it, but just enough that it's not like that so that it's interesting.
So tell me how that sort of played into, because for those of you who don't know, Scott did create the music for Brought to the Table. So I want to hear like how that came around, because I know that's not good. I asked you about it once and you said it's not so much writing as it was just screwing around.
Yeah, it's not so much like the equivalent I could for having world building is if you just randomly wrote a bunch of characters and places and then just deleted 90% of them until you had something cohesive. that's effectively what I did, and it didn't even turn out that cohesive.
Wait, so hold on. So how did you, like, walk me through the process here. How did you get to our theme song?
The theme song is actually not played in any episodes anymore, by the way, or it's very infrequently played. It's mostly cut from a bunch of clips of a longer version. But not important. I started with a chord progression. I started with like a very simple one. And then I started with a simple chord progression. I recorded it and played it back to myself and listened to it. And then I just started playing over that. And I noticed that it sounded like nothing. Like, I didn't want to listen to it. So then I went back and I basically took the chord progression. I kept the same key and I started changing the ones that I wanted to and adding some rhythm to it to make it more interesting. Then I played over that. So you have this like iterative back and forth where like I basically copy and pasted a really boring chord progression. I added in some substitutions. I changed it up a little bit, added an interesting chord in the middle. And it's not really that interesting, but I changed it up and then I played over it. And then I just played over it for like 10 minutes maybe until I came up with some like themes that I liked. I put them together, did that again until eventually I came out with something. I had Xiao, my roommate in the room, like, you know, like, what should I replace this chord with? So we had like a back and forth a little bit on the thing that's, I think, the outro now. But yeah, come up with some like baseline stuff, try and play over it. So try and make a cohesive thing out of it, realize what it's lacking, go back to the basics and just iterate on that.
You know what's wild? That is dead on the money for how I created my character's backstory. I mean, just like, yeah. It is dead on the money. So I was up in Fredericksburg or DC. I was up in Northern Virginia for some reason or another. And I was with the DM, Connor, and on our way back, I was in the front seat. Everybody else was really tired, and I had to keep him awake. So I said, Connor, we're going to figure out my backstory. And so, like, we just started, I just started saying things, that might have played into how he worked. And then, he and I would be like, well, this works because, but this doesn't work because. And then we just, like, slowly filter out things that had more cons than pros and then shifted into, like, okay, well, this fits because this motif is here. This motif, reappears here, or, like, his themes. Or not his themes, but like this definitely contributes directly to this. And so like that exact process of, going back and forth, just like essentially throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks.
That works, though.
It works.
I mean,
yeah, it works.
Carter and I did that last night. Carter and I literally did that last night.
Yeah, we did.
Guys, the lesson from this is find somebody who you can throw spaghetti at the wall with. Because Ian and I have also definitely had this conversation while he was coming up with his world building of like, hey, I wanted to do this, but instead it sounds like this. What would you think if I did this instead? Sometimes it's fun to have kind of a proverbial wall to throw spaghetti at, and the wall gets to throw spaghetti back.
I was thinking that the wall had a stapler, but I like that too. But one thing that I think, it even if that person doesn't provide much like, oh, you should do this instead, I think that it's got a very interesting parallel to like just rubber duck programming. Those of you unfamiliar, I won't say common, but it is a recognized form of debugging your own code is literally just setting a rubber duck on your desk and telling that rubber duck how your code works line by line. And then eventually, you're saying it out loud and you're telling quote unquote somebody, you figure it out because you spoke it out and you broke through those gaps that you create just like when it's in your head. So like,
yeah, because like whenever it's in your head, you're just kind of, you fill in those spaces in like internally. So like you'll leave those gaps whenever you're writing or creating something.
Yeah. It's partially like sometimes you read things too fast to actually consciously process what's going on. It's a lot like I learned this trick in like middle school or maybe earlier, where like if you want to actually spell check your stuff, it had to be a long time ago because we actually had to spell check. You don't read it. You don't read it. You read it word for word backwards. Then you have no context on what the word means, and you can focus more on the actual spelling of it.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Oh, man. Does anybody have any final creative... does anybody have any more final thought, final pieces of creative advice?
As somebody who has sat on a like creation for multiple years and done nothing with it, just fucking do something with it. Doesn't matter what it is, just fucking do it. It's much easier than you think.
Even if it's not for a lot of people, you're still making something for yourself and others to enjoy. Doing things that you want to do just because you want to do them is super fucking valid.
I just want to make sure people don't get discouraged. Everybody on this podcast said today they started with something and threw away large chunks, if not almost all of it, and that's what they got in the end. Maybe it's not the perfect thing, but you've thrown away 90% of the bad thing, so how bad could it really be?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the final thing I would end with is be creative, if even if you're not talented at it. I have no talent in art or drawing whatsoever, and for a years of my life, I would never draw because I had a lot of very good friends who were very, very talented artists, and I was like, damn, I'm never going to be that good. Like, this is just trash. And then within the last year, I've started keeping notebooks of doodles and drawings, and I just do them for me. Carter's right. The audience is just me. And it makes me really happy. And every once in a while, I'll show someone, and they'll be like, Diana, that's really good. And I'm like, oh, thank you. So even if you don't think you're good at something, like Scott's like, oh yeah, it was really nothing, making this or that, or oh, I'm not that great a singer. I'm like, I will fight anyone in the street who says Scott is not good at singing. He is very good. Just because you don't think you're talented at it doesn't mean you aren't. And it shouldn't stop you either way. Be creative for the sake of being creative, my man.
All right. Well, calzones. Oh, I guess we should do the outro first, huh?
Hey, before you leave, if you would like to talk to us about your creative process, or you want to show us things you've made, please be kind. Or you want to talk about any of the things that we've talked about here today, you know, we have a lot of spaces you can find us on. You can find us on Facebook, you can find us on Tumblr, you can find us on Twitter at To The Table Pod, and you can email us at broughttothetable@gmail.com. Calzones.
Yeah, if you want a calzone, email me. broughttothetable@gmail.com.
Preferred food dish that we are currently saying.
Yo.
Also, cooking is creative. If you want to make us calzones, email us.
Oh my god, make us calzones.
Yo, you guys want to hear what like my greatest creative accomplishment?
Yes.
No.
Unfortunate, because it's happening. I found you three already know this, but for the audience, I found out very recently. I have designed various tattoos for myself. I've not gotten any.
Oh,
of them.
Yes.
Let me finish the damn story. Damn.
No.
I've designed various tattoos for myself. I've not gotten any of them because I haven't been happy enough with any of them. So you know, I've only got the one that I already had. But I always post them to the internet when I make them because I'm proud of them. You know, I make them and they're interesting and, maybe someone will enjoy them. And, I found out like 2-3 weeks ago that someone very much so enjoyed one of my pieces, because they're getting it actively tattooed on their body. Like they're currently in the process of it at the time of recording.
So cool.
And that's the fucking wildest shit, y'all. Art that I made ended up on somebody's body permanently.